Hi, chaps.
Hello.
James, I notice you have not got your cap on your camera this week. So are you sure you don't want to put it back on?
We'll see you for now.
I had a Zoom chat with a guest for a future podcast the other day. I prepped him with the questions before we started.
Yeah, I mean, I used to work in the civil service. We used to do that for ministers. They never speak off their own cuff. They always have a briefing.
Well, indeed. The only other thing I was going to say is to help me with my syncing. I have a clever idea, which is when we're all recording and ready to start, we all clap at the same time. That'll help me get it in sync a little bit quicker, I think.
Right, okay.
Cool. So shall we get cracking? Shall we do a 3, 2, 1 and clap? 1, 2, 3. Close enough.
This isn't the BBC Light programme.
The Tony Hancock Appreciation Society presents, very nearly an armful, a Tony Hancock podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Very Nearly an Armful, brought to you by the Tony Hancock Appreciation Society.
On the show, we'll be discussing Tony's famous series, Hancock's Half Hour.
We'll discuss the show, its production, and what we liked about it.
We'll rate and review the episode and just generally get our geek on about vintage comedy.
We're your hosts. I'm James Griffith.
I'm Martin Gibbons.
I'm John Street.
And I'm Tim Elms.
And we're spread across the south of the UK in a line from Wiltshire to Essex via Kent.
And our members are spread all over the world. We have members as far afield as Tulsa, Oklahoma, Del Mar, California, and Princeton, New Jersey.
Blimey. In this podcast, we'll be chatting about my very favourite radio episode, Hancock in the Police, from the fourth radio series. And that was when the show had really hit its stride. This episode features at least three roles for Kenneth and Tony in drag. It was first broadcast at 4 p.m, very early, on Sunday the 10th of February 1957, having been recorded the previous Thursday evening.
But first of all, chaps, how's everyone's week been?
Very good, thanks, James.
Yeah, it's been a good week, thank you.
Excellent. Very good, yes, things go, you know, can't complain, but I'm sure I will.
Great. I downloaded a new an audiobook today, and I wondered if any of you heard of it, Hancock Comedy Genius. And it's, I think it's about his early career, and it's sort of narrated by Dennis Norden and lots of Tony's own voice, I think, telling stories. It's all pieced together in a bit of a early life memoir. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I don't think I've ever heard of this one, no.
Really? No.
It was released in 2006, so it's been out for quite a while.
That's the one with the, is that got the Paul Merton chat on it as well?
I couldn't tell you. It didn't say anything. I only just downloaded it, but there's Galton and Simpson do a little bit in there as well.
Yes.
And it's presented by Dennis Norden. Oh, with contributions from Paul Merton, yes.
Yes, it's a double CD came out. Yeah, I've got the CD. So you've got the Dennis Norden thing on one CD and then the Paul Merton on disc two. So, yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
And one of those has been also re-released in the Hancock's Half Hour Collectibles. Can't remember which volume. Mm. And the second disc on that is in the Selected TV Soundtracks download, which has just come out. But it is a great release, and it's a really good listen. And there's some really nice early stuff. I think there's some extracts from the what was then the only surviving Star Bill with Tony, although there's been subsequently another one discovered, which is also in the collectibles. But yeah, it's a great double CD, and it was a lovely tribute that came out.
Yeah, well, I'm really looking forward to listening to it on one of my drives. So
yeah, it's a good one.
Is where did you two first meet? Now, I believe it was in a sex change clinic in Geneva.
Oh, if only.
When we've made some money, yes.
Hello, I'm Dennis Norden, and I was there when Tony Hancock couldn't afford an astrakhan collar, much less the coat to go with it.
So John will be very pleased to hear me say that I've started listening to Cabin Pressure. I've never heard it before, and John, I think, recommended it quite a long while back, and I finally got around to listening to the first series. So thoroughly enjoying all the trips to various exotic places with a less than competent airline, which has been great fun.
I'll have to catch up with that. I've never heard it. Yeah, I've got the series.
It's a fantastic one.
Yeah, I've got all the episodes, but I must catch up with that. Is that John?
John Finnemore, that one is.
John Finnemore.
Finnemore, yes. Yeah.
And it stars Benedict Cumberbatch, and I can't remember the other two.
Roger Allam and Stephanie Cole.
Stephanie Cole, that's right.
Stephanie Cole's been in everything, hasn't she?
Because it went on for quite a few series, didn't it, Cabin Fresher?
It did, yeah. And I think they've every episode is a place name, and they are the entire alphabet. So I think there's 24 episodes, or thereabouts.
Right.
Each one with a different destination, with beginning with a different letter of the alphabet. Mm. But quite a good fun show. It's I think the characters and the cast really... There's a lot of similarities to Hancock with sort of the criminality of Roger Allam's very dry, deadpan character and the stupidity of John Finnemore's being a bit like Bill Kerr, and, of course, the pompous idiot in sort of semi-in-charge being Benedict Cumberbatch. So worth a listen to anyone who's interested.
And the one I've just listened to had Helen Baxendale in as a Hollywood film star with slight delusions of grandeur, shall we say. It was great fun. Absolutely brilliant stuff. So well worth a listen.
Let's fly away.
Martin, what on earth are you doing?
Colin, nothing.
What's going on in there? You've been on stand for half an hour. I've been waiting for you in the porter cabin.
Yes, we saw your light was on and we thought you might still be there.
But you didn't come in.
No, we saw your light was on and we thought you might still be there.
Well, come in now. I want to talk to you.
One of the things that I've been looking at since the last podcast, and I think James will be pleased to hear this, is that I've watched the Titfield Thunderbolt, which is on iPlayer.
Oh, brilliant.
Great.
You mentioned that in the last series, James, I think. And
I'm proud of you, Tim.
Yes. Yeah. I hadn't realised, actually, it was in colour. My memory of it was an old black and white film, but it must have been restored because the colour is pretty good when you watch it on the TV. Very good.
Yeah, it's really good.
And it makes a great. It's an Ealing comedy, isn't it? It's a great film.
I say, is this a normal hazard of railway travel? Oh, a duel! How very delightful!
It's a lovely, just feel-good film, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It's. You can just sit down on a sofa and enjoy that.
I was going to say, it's interesting hearing you say that. It's in colour because I am convinced that I've only seen it in black and white, so I'll have to keep an eye out for that to see it in colour.
Yeah, I was wondering whether I was getting it confused in my mind. There's a St Trinian's film that involves a train. Is it the great St Trinian's train robbery?
That's right, yes. Mm.
That might be in black and white, and I was wondering whether in my memory I was getting them confused.
Well, because Sid's in, I think, one of the St Trinian's films as well, isn't he? Possibly
is
that
he?
One, I'm not too sure.
Right.
I think so.
It's a great film, and it also stars John Gregson, which, of course, is the link with Hancock, because John Gregson was the guest star in Hancock's 43 Minutes.
Yes.
And we don't speak about that very much either. I don't think we've ever referred to it in the podcast, and people generally don't refer to it. But it was a Christmas episode. It came at the end of, what was it, Series 3 or Series 4, whatever, on the TV. Mm. It came at Christmas, and instead of being half an hour long, the BBC extended it to 43 minutes, hence it's called Hancock's 43 Minutes. But it's actually in sketch format, and which harks back to the 56 series that we talked about before.
Yeah.
But one of the interesting things about it when I watched that, John Gregson appears as their, like, guest, and they get him to perform in a play about the Three Musketeers.
Now look, John, pull yourself together, boy. Your mother may be watching. You're on television now. We're doing the Three Musketeers and you're playing D'Artagnan.
Oh, I see. Now, what's the plot so far?
Nothing, mate. Absolutely nothing. We're starting off from scratch with the rest of us.
I say,
hurry it up. I've got train to catch.
All right, hang on a minute.
The Cardinal.
Oh, how do you do?
John.
And it just looks like those sorts of plays that Mortimer Wise used to do.
I was thinking that.
Really does.
When they get a guest star along and get them to take part in a play. And it always makes me wonder whether they got the idea from this episode of Hancock. It's a great programme.
It certainly is.
The variety acts with it. Some of the stuff on there is cribbed from the stage show. I mean, he does the juggling sketch, you know, when he's got him and his stooges being jugglers. And that's something Hancock did on stage.
Well, we're going to bring you a trio of continental jugglers. There are three of them in all. The three Gordinis. Unfortunately, they haven't turned up. No matter, I shall do it myself.
There's also an act involving a performing chimpanzee, which presumably wouldn't be allowed these days, but it's quite interesting to watch.
Similarly, the 56 series is a bit like Morecambe and Wise as well. It's a bit like the play What I Wrote, you know, particularly the final episode of the 56 series, and there's a lot of breaking the fourth wall and things like that in that show. So, yeah, it's you do wonder. I suppose it's a style that the case for other performers, but Morecambe and Wise are the most well-known for it, aren't they?
Yes, yeah.
They are.
Yeah.
And what I liked about the Hancock's 43 minutes is the premise of the show is that Sid's booked all the acts and, of course, they don't turn up.
Mm. Yeah.
And then you get some of the Hancock's half-hour repertory company, like John Veer, coming on and doing all sorts of acts, which he does very badly. One of them is some... walking on broken glass or walking on glass.
Oh, that's it, yeah.
It's just a pane of glass that's not broken and all that sort of thing. And
the paper folding.
Paper folding where he's supposed to fold the paper and tear it into shape of a chain of people or whatever it might be. And he just tears it into little squares and throws it on the floor.
Yes.
It's so bad, but so hilariously funny because of that.
Absolutely, yeah.
He's supposed to make patterns out of it.
Patterns?
You know what he's talking about?
I don't know. I just tear it.
Yeah, it's a sort of display of strength, sort of male Joan Rhodes.
I'm mystified, really. I've no wish to be awkward. The dance was quite exciting in its way. It had me going a couple of times there, but I thought it was supposed to be done with bare feet on broken glass.
Charming? I'm not cutting my feet's ribbons for you. The man's a sadist.
It's very different. I always, because that's probably one of the TV series of Hancock's Half Hour, probably one of the last ones I would have seen, you know, because I'd seen many of the other shows and the classics years before that one came out on DVD, because I don't think it was ever really repeated very much. But I struggle to enjoy that one as much as I do the sitcom setup. But, you know, I watched it again recently. It's not, it has its moments, but it's quite different, isn't it?
Yeah. It's worth revisiting it every so often, isn't it? You know, just going back and having a look.
Yeah, indeed it is. Mm. All I've watched this week really is lots of bits of American Dad and things like that in between doing editing of the previous podcast and stuff. So, although I did watch Rififi earlier today, which is a French film. The subtitles were slightly out of sync.
You see it 10 times?
Just the once, but... But we'll chat about that, I suspect, more as we go along. But it's a great film noir, beautifully shot. And the whole heist sequence is about half an hour with no spoken dialogue whatsoever. Yeah, interesting movie. So I now know what they did in Rififi, which is pretty much what they describe in the episode. You spray the fire extinguisher in to gum up the mechanism so it doesn't ring the bell and you're away.
À mon tour, ça ne fait pas un pli. Je suis bonne pour la Rififi.
I suppose if it was cut, it'd ring.
Oh, straight away.
Yeah.
Now, this sort can only be immobilised. You won't breathe a word of this to anybody, will you?
Don't be silly, of course
no,
not.
No. Well, you do what they did in Rififi. You saw Rififi?
10 times.
Well, there you are, then.
Oh, it's that sort. Well, you squirt a fire extinguisher liquid in the mechanism and gum it all up.
You've got it. What you writing in your notebook?
Eh? Oh, I just remember, it's my mother's birthday.
I'll give her my love, will you?
Yes, I will, too.
So, do you reckon it's time for the news? Do we have some news this week, Martin?
No new news this week. Just a reminder to listeners that the Tony Hancock Show, that 1956 sketch show, as we've already just mentioned, is now out on DVD, and all 6 surviving episodes from the first series are available to purchase, along with the Lighthouse Keepot sketch from Tony's stage show of the time. And that's available from Kaleidoscope at www.tvbrain. So well worth a purchase and a listen. It showcases Hancock in such a different way to the Hancock's Half Hours, very physical comedy. And it's, I think, probably a lot more like his stage shows. And later on in this podcast series, we will be looking at one of those episodes in detail. So it'd be great if you get your copy so you can watch before we put the podcast on air. It'd be great.
One of the things I've been doing since the last podcast is to visit the Riverside Studios in London. Now, the Riverside's a very modern facility where they make TV shows such as Have I Got News For You? But back in the day, it was the site of the former BBC Riverside TV studios. And more importantly, that's where they made over 40 episodes of Hancock's Half Hour. And the good news is that because it's the studio's 65th anniversary and also the 100th anniversary of the BBC, they're going to have a screening of three episodes of Hancock's Half Hour that were made there. So the episodes they're going to show are The Missing Page, Lord Byron Lived Here, and 12 Angry Men. Now, Martin and I are going to go along and give an introduction to the episodes. We're also going to display some archive items. So we're looking forward to a great day. And it will all take place on Saturday, the 23rd of April at 2 o'clock at the Riverside Studios. And you can get tickets for just £10 each, and they're on sale now. And if you want to find out more about it and book your tickets, you need to go to riversidestudios.co.uk. And hopefully we'll get to meet some listeners there.
Do we want to talk about the lad himself and that play that's on, as we know the dates of that at this stage?
Yes, let me just, shall I say something? Let me just think what I'm going to say for a second.
Certainly.
Hold on, I've got a... Well, I've got it. I've got a...
Just like a politician, doesn't know what to say unless he's got a script in front of him.
Yeah, one of the things I've done this week is book tickets to see Mark Brailsford. Now, Mark is one of our members in the Society, and he is performing in Roy Smiles' award-winning comedy called The Lad Himself, and that is running from the 20th of April to the 1st of May upstairs at the Gatehouse in North London. So we're very much looking forward to going to see that. It's apparently a very funny show. It was recommended by the late wonderful Barry Quire. It's a shame he won't be able to go to see it himself this time because, as we know, he sadly passed away recently. But yes, it looks like it's going to be a great show. As I said, Mark is one of our members, so it should be pretty good. And he's performed this before. He's performed it at the Edinburgh Festival and he's performed it at the Brighton Festival. And so this is the first time the show has come to London. So for those of you in Tulsa, Oklahoma, it's probably a bit far for you to travel. But any listeners who can get to London to see this, I think it'll be a great night out.
Mm-hmm. And you can get tickets from upstairs at thegatehouse.com.
Tickets are £20 each and concessions £18. So there's the plug for the show.
Marvellous. The afterlife. A hospital waiting room.
If they ask me to give blood, they'll be in trouble.
Joan Bakewell, the thinking man's crumb, it interviews great women of our time. This week, Fanny Craddock. How to cook venison without the animals getting in the gravy.
I should probably write an actual sentence rather than my just fumbling through. So, it's time for the tweets and emails. Do we have any feedback and things from members to share?
Well, I kind of wish you hadn't picked it up so much, John, because we haven't.
Because we don't.
We haven't had an awful lot because we haven't really released anything. I think there's lots of people... I did tweet that we were a picture of us recording last time we recorded, which was a fortnight ago at this time. And lots of interest and lots of messages and lots of likes and things like that. But We haven't really had any correspondence at all. I refreshed the inbox again. I did it this morning. And I refreshed it again, but there's nothing in there.
No worries.
I got snow blindness when I looked at the inbox.
In the last podcast, we was talking about tracks being sampled. You know, we talked about the George Michael track and various other tracks. Mm. And this followed on from something we was talking about in the last series about Hancock featuring in music. Mm. And one of the tweets I saw that came in to me was from Poppies on a Tray. That's a nice name for a Twitter account. But basically, what Poppies on a Tray was saying, have we heard of a song called Flight by Peter Hammill? And I have to admit, this wasn't on my radar. I understand Peter Hammill is quite a popular guy out there. And one of his songs has got the line in it that the radio ham's giving out blood. No, he's not listening. which is clearly a reference to Hancock's blood donor and the radio ham. So when he told, I mean, I hadn't heard about this, so I thought I'd better look it up. And the guy who tweeted it sent me a YouTube link, and I looked up the lyrics. You know, you can look up the lyrics on Google, but these lyrics are quite incredible, because the actual song is something, I haven't counted them, but it's something like 1,000 words in this song.
Being up on it is in the hope of being safe, but radio hands out giving blood. No, he's not listening.
And none of it is repeated. It's not, you know, repeat second verse or chorus or whatever. It's just this incredibly long song. It's absolutely brilliant. But I thought it was quite interesting. But I have to say, it's not the sort of music I would normally listen to.
None of that punk rock like you normally listen to then, eh, Tim?
Well, absolutely, yeah. You know, never mind the Hancocks, I'm the, you know, whatever. Yeah, I'm not, yeah, I'm a bit too old for punk rock.
Yeah, never too old for punk rock, Tim.
I was a mod and I'm staying that way.
Fair enough.
We also had an interesting email from one of our new members. I often exchange emails with people who join society. This one was actually back in December, and it's taken me a while to catch up with it. I didn't have time the last podcast to read it out. But basically, this is Darren Bryant. And I always say, you know, how did you get into Hancock and stuff like that? And he says that he was indoctrinated into it by his mum, and that every Sunday they would sit down to their roast meal and mum would play her copy of Unique Hancock. And that, and their favourite line apparently was, "They're not chickens, mush, they're birds of paradise."
The aforementioned vehicle is causing an obstruction. Move it.
Oh, come now, my good man. I live here. It's parked outside my own house.
Your property only extends as far as those horrible chickens cut out in your hedge.
Horrible chickens? They are not chickens, Mush. They are birds of paradise.
But he goes on to say, and this is quite funny, he said, "Oh, by the way, my granddad used to be a door-to-door salesman for Hoover in Bournemouth, my hometown, and once sold Tony Hancock's mum a Hoover vacuum cleaner."
Oh, brilliant.
So that's Darren's claim to fame, his granddad.
That's a tenuous link, isn't it?
There you go. It is.
Oh, I thought that was brilliant.
We know what brand of vacuum Lily Hancock used now, don't
Indeed,
we?
Indeed, yes. So. Yeah.
I wonder if anyone else has got any tenuous links to Hancock. They should get in touch and let us know.
Yes, we could have a tenuous links section, couldn't we?
It would be, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
6 degrees of Tony Hancock or something like that, you know. Never mind Kevin Bacon.
By the way, he also says in his email that he likes the brilliant podcast, and he also refers to the wonderful East Cheam Lad Twitter account. So smug mode.
Time to take a bow.
If he does that, he'll headbutt the microphone.
Yeah, he's obviously got good judgment.
He must do.
And I wonder if the vacuum cleaner salesman for Hancock's mum, you know, if there was any inspiration for that on the end of the Threatening Letters radio show, where, of course, he violently attacks the vacuum cleaner salesman.
Oh, that's right.
He does, yes, doesn't he? Yeah.
He does. Mm.
Thinking he's the thinking he's from Durham and he's going to be done in.
This is the BBC Light Programme. Here is the news. In Durham this morning, the police detained a man accused of sending threatening letters through the post to several public personalities. He pleaded guilty and reserved his defence. East Cheam. Mr. Anthony Hancock, the well-known comedian, this morning went berserk and violently attacked a vacuum cleaner salesman who called... He was detained at East Cheam Police Station and bail was refused. Friends say he's been overworking lately.
It's a fantastic episode.
I hate you and everyone down my street hates you. That was inspired by a real fan letter, you know, that someone wrote to Tony.
He read it out, didn't he?
Yeah, apparently. So that's a good one. That's a good one. So I suppose we'll move on to our main subject of the wonderful Hancock in the Police, which I've always known as sort of Tony Joins the Police, just because that was what was scribbled down on a cassette tape that was knocking around in my house back in the 1990s or 80s. It's a fantastic little show. I love the criminality of it, you know. It's just got a great open as well, though, doesn't it? Oh, here we are. Situation's vacant. Oh, we're back.
Oh,
yes.
Well, here we are. Situation's vacant.
Oh! Me back!
It's catching me again. I think I'll have to have a few days in bed.
You stay where you are. It's always the same. As soon as I get the situation's vacant page, your back starts playing you up.
I tell you, my back is hurting me.
Well, it's your own fault. You shouldn't rush downstairs so quickly to tear this page out and burn it.
Do they still have situations vacant? Is that still a thing?
I don't know.
Yeah, still adverts in papers, surely there must be. I think not so much now, but...
Do they? I just wonder whether the heading nowadays is just jobs or something, as opposed to situations.
It's probably just jobs.
Oh, I would think so.
Probably.
Yeah, I can't imagine them having situations vacant as the heading these days. Just be vacancies or something, won't it, I should think.
I absolutely love this episode. It's absolutely glorious. It's just a laugh a minute all the way through.
Mm. Very strong.
And Kenneth Williams plays so many characters in it. I don't know how he holds it together.
I counted five.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
As many toes as you've got.
So I've got three different police officers.
Good afternoon, Sergeant. My friend and I wish to enlist in the constabulary, don't we, William?
Yes.
So if you would kindly produce the necessary forms...
Hang on. Let's have a few details first. We don't have anybody in the force.
Anybody?
Let's have a few details. Full names. You first, the elderly gentleman.
William?
I mean you, trousers. And look here, tomorrow we'll be going out of the nasty, cruel world as fully-fledged constables. It's not good enough. What's the matter, Anne Cook? Don't you like your work?
Yes, it's not that hard.
Well, aren't you happy with us?
Happy? You don't know.
Well, don't you get on with the other boys?
Oh, it isn't. No, it's not that. It's not that.
Plus, he plays... Who have I got here?
Newsreader.
The newsreader,
yep.
And Snide at the end. So that I make it five. So it's a brilliant episode for Williams. Mm.
And also, he goes from being the police officer at the point that Snide is about to come in, and there's a single line from Bill, and he's straight into the Snide character.
Straight in?
Straight in, with, you know, with a few seconds gap between being that police officer and straight into the Snide voice.
Mm.
And I think that this appearance from Snide is probably the funniest of all of them. Just hilarious.
I think you're smashing.
I'll slosh you in a minute.
Oh, let's see, I like girls with a bit of spirit. Bit of fire. I bet you're Mexican or something, aren't you?
This is one of the episodes that was done by the Apollo Theatre Group, wasn't it? We all went to see.
Mm.
And this thing about Kenneth Williams playing two characters right close next to each other, they did that on the stage, and it was brilliant. The guy who plays Kenneth Williams...
Colin Elmer,
that's right. Mm. Lovely chap. And he did that by walking across the stage from one microphone to another. It's very cleverly done, how they move from one character to another. But it was brilliant. That was a superb performance, absolutely.
Oh, I like them with a bit of meat on them. Oh, Peter, well, I know one twice my size who's just waiting for you. No, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Oh, it's my first time a girl's ever winked at me. I'm not letting you go now. Destiny has thrown us together. Oh, we were meant for each other, you provocative little siren, you.
And, of course, they worked from the original script. Now, the original script is slightly longer than the radio episode.
But it's quite a bit longer.
There's a couple of sections there, I think, mainly the first scene where Tony's at the recruitment office for the police with the sergeant.
How tall are you?
Yeah.
With or without helmet? Mm. Isn't it?
Can't we just put down under 30? I'm sensitive about my age.
How tall are you?
With or without the helmet?
Without.
With or without the boots?
Without.
6'2".
You're a short man for 6'2", aren't you?
Well, you know how it is. Round shoulders, bow legs and flat feet. It takes yards off you.
Well, that's in the long edit, but there's also an extra bit of...
We don't just have anybody in the force. Anybody? Anybody? My good man, we are not anybody. William, tell the gentleman who we are.
My friend here is Tony Hancock and I'm William Kerr.
There. Well, what am I supposed to do? Take off my helmet and bow? No, that won't be necessary. Just a touch of the forelock will suffice. Oh, you're too gracious, I'm sure. Now, let's have a few details.
The version of this that's on the CD release has got quite, well, not many, but a couple of extra bits. compared to previous CD releases. So this is a longer edit. Whether it's the full edit of the original show, we don't know. It's certainly getting close to it, I would think, now.
I'd say there's also an additional bit that was cut out later on when Hancock is a policeman and he meets Sid on the street and he's telling him, oh, you know, you won't be able to get in this shop unless you've got this sort of key or whatever. And he's sort of giving away the information. And then there's a whole scene after that was cut out that involves Bill telling Sid about a fur shop just having a delivery of fur.
Oh, really?
And it's the same sort of thing, really, you know, giving him all the details.
Yeah.
And then the newsreader comes on to say that a fur shop has been broken into and all their goods stolen, you know. But that in the Apollo Theatre production, they used the uncut version, if you like, and it was lovely to hear those lines that you don't normally hear.
Hello, Billy.
Oh, Sid. Good to see you. Gets lonely on this beat with no one to talk to. I don't see Tubbs till we meet halfway down the street.
Well, he had a bit of trouble on his side last night, I believe.
Yeah, smash and grab. I told him he ought to keep his eyes open. It's his own fault. It wouldn't have happened if I'd have been over there.
Of course not. You're an intelligent copper, not like him. Here, your beat goes past the fur warehouse, don't it?
Yeah. They had a stack of stuff come in last night worth a fortune. Oh, but it's quite safe. Because they've got a new burglar alarm, you see. They can only...
Here is the news. Thieves broke into a fur warehouse last night in Bond Street between 1 o'clock and 1:15 while the patrolling constable was round the corner out of earshot. Will anybody give any information?
You see, I'm listening to the radio version, I think, with the newsreader. Doesn't sound like it's been edited in anywhere, so I wonder if it's something they just cut in rehearsals because they were overrunning ever so slightly by 2 or 3 minutes. But I think the version we've got is the longest one. I think this is one of the few, well, I say few, the 25 or so episodes that the BBC still retain on its original master tape as well. So one would think that we've got the longest version.
The BBC don't play that version that we've got, this longer version, do they?
No, not historically. I don't know if they do now. I've not checked the version that's currently on BBC Sounds, but I think that the longest version was specially prepared from another recording or from somewhere else for the box set.
They definitely weren't on the tapes that I had from the sort of late 80s.
No, that's right. And I think, like with the collectibles, I think Ted Kendall, the audio restorer, did a lot of work with the collectibles and He amassed quite a collection of these extended episodes that went into that release. And I think he did a lot of remastering for the CD release as well, or the series CD releases. So I would imagine some of them may have come from his archive.
So this is on the latest CD release, is it? Because I've got the original CD box set and it's not on there.
Yes, it's on the... Right. There are quite a few extended versions on the series CD releases.
So I bought my box sets too early then.
You did, yes.
Yeah, I've bought my box sets twice.
Yeah, series 4, 5 and 6 each have longer episodes, don't they?
They do. Mm. 4, 5 and 6 got longer episodes. And I think some of it was because the technology has moved on so that the ones where you've got not such good quality off-air edits, Ted was able to then edit, put those little bits into the transcription service version from the BBC without them being quite as noticeable. But when the first box set came out, the technology wasn't as good.
The only one where it's unfortunately very noticeable really is something, say, such as the Foreign Legion, where there's a very poor quality recording of the longer scenes about the desert that they're flying over in the plane, I think. But those extra lines do make it that bit more fun, don't they? As James was saying, you know.
It's great hearing them for the first time.
It is, isn't it?
It's absolutely fantastic, yeah. I love it. Little buzz you get from it.
It's full of wonderful lines as well. I mean, that opening sort of scene is like, well, I'm not dressing up again.
Suit elderly couple.
No, I'm not dressing up again.
It won't be for long. That's what you said last time. 3 years you had me going around collecting a widow's pension. But it seemed the natural thing to do. After all, I spent 6 months in the attic while you collected me life insurance.
Me life insurance, which is basically the plot of Step 2 and Some Ride Again, in short. So it's an idea they went back to old Gorton Simpson, isn't it?
Well, I listened to this I listened to it once to enjoy it, and the second time with probably in a more analytical ear. Notice the incidental music's very, very different. throughout, and it's almost very military at certain points. I think there's about four or five different stages of it where you've got the normal incidental music, probably about the fourth one, and the last one is a little bit more like returning hero kind of victorious incidental music after he shouldn't really feel victorious because, you know, 39 shops have been burgled on his watch, but he's managed to catch the culprit.
Yes, and I think this is the only episode where that music is used.
Yes, it's a piece called Policeman's Holiday.
This feels very militarial? They're just making up words now.
Militaristic?
Sorry, John, what's it called again? Policeman's Holiday?
It's called Policeman's Holiday. It was the theme of Will Hayes' film, Ask a Policeman, but it was originally composed in 1911 by Montague Ewing. And the recording, I think, in the radio show is from a 1933 performance of it by the New Light Symphony Orchestra. Quite Victorian type music, isn't it?
It did feel almost like a film in that respect, in terms of the music popping in and out. It didn't really feel like a, it almost had shades of Carry On.
Yeah, it does. Mm. Yeah, because it's quite a humorous piece, isn't it?
A bit different, isn't it? You know,
But I didn't realise that was a piece of recorded music. I didn't know whether Wally Stott had done some special... a special composition for that, but obviously not. That's interesting.
No, just from the 78 RPM record, one would assume. But it's a lovely little bit of music, and I think you can listen to the full 2.5 minute song on YouTube if you so choose. So there's not too many things in this episode really that date it too much, other than when Hattie refers to him as Fabian.
Yeah.
I don't think you're entering the police force with the right idea. Police are to uphold the law.
Well, of course, if we get away with it, we'll know how it's done and stop anybody else doing it. We're doing them a favour, really.
Fabian, have you stopped...
And I wonder who Fabian was, and I had a little Google of that as well. That was a chap called Robert Fabian, who was a detective superintendent in the Met. And he, when he retired from the Met, he became a crime writer, and there was a TV series in about 1955, which was a drama show called Fabian of the Yard. And at the end of every episode, much like, say, Tales of the Unexpected with Roald Dahl, he comes on to explain the real-life crime that inspired this particular episode that week. So that would be like Dixon of Dock Green or like Dame Cressida these days, possibly.
Let us meet the real Bob Fabian, former superintendent of detectives at Scotland Yard, the man called England's greatest detective.
Police science and routine police work make it increasingly difficult for the so-called invisible killer to escape.
I didn't think to Google that, but I automatically assumed it's something out of Oliver Twist or something like that.
Sounds like it, doesn't it? Yeah.
It actually started on TV around about the same time as Hancock's Half Hour started on the radio. But one interesting thing about it is that it was one of the first TV programmes to be filmed.
Oh, really?
As opposed to going out live. And this is quite interesting because we often have this talk about Hancock's Half Hour and about the shows going out live and then... an early version of videotape came in, and Hancock wanted his comedy to be filmed, but everyone said, no, you can't have it. And one of the reasons why they didn't film Hancock was A, the cost of it, and also that once you've filmed, it has to be processed and stuff like that. But it seems that the drama department were having more success because this Fabian would have been done by the drama department, and that was filmed in 1954, whereas Hancock never actually got Hancock's Half Hour to be filmed. It wasn't until in the 60s when some of the ITV stuff came out that it was actually put on the film. I think there was one rule for drama and one rule for light entertainment.
Definitely. I think the thing of having an audience for light entertainment would mean that you couldn't shoot it like you would shoot a film, because the drama could be shot out of order and things like that, whereas a sitcom has to be sort of continuous. Mm. And also, if you have to go back, as we may know, you know, if you've been the audience of a BBC radio sitcom like one of the Missing Hancocks, when they redo the line, you know, people will titter along, but not quite as much as they did the first time around when they got it wrong. So it's not really as feasible for comedy.
Mm. On the subject of the audience, you do have that whistle, which I've previously mentioned.
I heard that. Yeah.
Did anyone listen out?
I didn't listen out for it, but I was listening to it the other night in preparation for this podcast, and I heard the whistle and automatically thought of you, James. But
that's very kind. It's like some sort of conditioning.
You probably thought, evening, cheeky.
But the funny thing was that after I was listening to that, I then listened to almost a gentleman. And there's a whistle at the start of that as well.
No, is there?
But that is clearly a member of the audience sort of whistling as opposed to cheering or whatever. Mm. The first time I heard it, I thought, oh, it's another whistle for James. And when I replayed it, I thought, no, I'm not sure. This is just, a member of the audience.
It does sound like someone right close to the mic, doesn't it? It's like...
Yeah. Yeah,
really, really close,
and it's a strange, it's not a calling out type whistle, is it? It's just like a testing type whistle, isn't it?
It is slightly, yeah. Mm. That's absolutely bugged me for the best part of 30 years. You need to get a life, really.
Yeah. A beauty like yours would fit in anywhere, my little goose. Come and have pictures with me.
I'm not coming. What's on?
Could be Bill. That's what I reckon.
I could just imagine someone sort of, signalling like,
yes,
stand closer or move over there or get ready.
Well, it could be one of the cars signalling another that you're about to miss your cue. Shift it, mate. You know? You don't know, do you? Because it's right in the middle of that scene, isn't it, with the morning cheeky.
It might be pick up the sound effects. Which is the whistle when the police do rush over. It's like, pick up the whistle, get ready to blow it, because he's just going to come to the pictures with me.
It's just before the whistle-blowing bit, isn't it?
Yeah. Speculating now, but it's nice to build that little story in your head, isn't it, and just sort of imagine what's going on.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. Yeah, because, it's seeing these and being in the audience must have been so wonderful. If only I'd been born 60 years earlier.
Mm. Oh, I'd love to have done it.
It's like when you hear the audience laugh and there's nothing being said. You can imagine that they're laughing at the facial reactions of the cast, and I sort of imagine Hancock looking at Ken or Bill and them looking, giving a look back and all that sort of stuff. It must have been fantastic to be in the audience for these.
Yeah, it must have been.
Yeah, no. Absolutely wonderful.
Or Kenneth doing something funny behind the scenes. You can imagine him just sort of ad-libbing quietly behind the scenes.
Yeah.
A bit like Robin Sebastian did in the recording of The Missing Hancocks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It would have been Kenneth Williams' facial expressions, wouldn't it? I think would have got the audience going.
Mm. Yes.
Mm. For me, it's the bit where... Bill just, because Bill was a giggler. They were all gigglers, I think, on The Simpson used to say.
He goes off of me.
There's a few bits where he just guffaws and just loses it and he has to walk away from the microphone guffawing and come back. And I can just sort of see it in my mind's eye. But yeah, those were lovely to see, but wasn't there.
Wasn't born.
My father wasn't even in a, what is it they say, an apple in the eye of your something, something. Mixing my metaphors now.
Twinkle in the eye.
Twinkle in the eye,
that's it. Twinkle in someone's eye.
Was it 1957 this was released, or 58?
This one was 57, February 57.
Yeah. My dad wasn't born either,
Recorded about 9 o'clock of an evening as well, so I think that might be why the audience are quite giggly. I think quite a few of them have come in from the pub.
None of you were born then, were you?
No.
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 No. I'm keeping quiet.
Wait, Tim might have been, but just.
No, I wasn't, but No. I've been 29 for a number of years.
He's 97, really. He's got a painting in the attic that keeps changing.
When I got to 29, I said, that's it, I'm not getting any older.
Yeah, when you get to a certain age, you can start to count backwards.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
As you say, this the bit where you're talking about the whistle, but that scene with Snyder and, of course, Hancock in drag is very surreal, but it's really hilarious.
How do I look, Bill?
Sensational. The skirt's a little too baggy, and you haven't got the colouring for a blonde wig, but otherwise perfect.
I'll be glad when I get out of these high heels. You're screwing up my bunion something horrible.
And I love the comment from Hancock when he's just about to they say, well, come on, you've got to go, and his final comment before he goes out is...
My seam straight.
My seam straight.
Absolutely
brilliant.
With such a straight voice.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Brilliant.
It's so clever, but it just really invokes a real a visual picture in your mind about what he must look like. I think it's so clever, especially for radio.
He did drag in the theatre, going right back to his teenage years. And when he... joined the RAF, he did his square bashing down at Weston-super-Mare, and he was arranging, even then, as a young man being called up into the RAF, he was arranging shows, and he dressed up as Cinderella for that in a tutu and everything. And he was only about, how old was he then, about 19 or something like that? And then he played Ugly Sisters in pantomime in later years as well. Mm. And when he did the Wings show in the late 40s, he was dragged up. So, he had quite a history of dragging up, did Hancock?
Yeah, although I'm sure I remember reading somewhere that he wasn't terribly keen on dragging it up, really. Maybe he was more so in his youth, but less so as time wore on, I'm not sure.
I think he had to be careful because I think a couple of times he sort of thought that his relationship with Kenneth Williams on the screen was a bit effeminate or whatever. And he didn't like that sort of thing. But I think to put on women's clothing as such, and particularly with his forces background, that would have been quite normal because when you're out, I mean, he was out in the desert.
When in Rome.
Well, he was out in the desert performing with the RAF gang shows and stuff, you know, and it's a bit like It Ain't Our Fault, Mum. I mean, they had to play all the characters. There was nothing was seen wrong in it, but it was done in a light-hearted, oh, look at me, I'm dressed as a woman type way, you know, and I think he was happy with that. I don't think that concerned him at all.
No.
I think you're right. But, of course, thinking of the Kenneth Williams character, Tony says, I think you're making a big mistake. Things are not what they seem. And then Kenneth Williams, fantastic line, no, I want you.
Want you.
You're making a big mistake. Things aren't what they seem. Go and find somebody else.
No, I want you.
Really over the top, isn't it? I bet you're an Eastern princess or something.
Yes. Like a bit of meat on them.
I want a bit of meat on them.
A bit of meat?
I like them with a bit of meat on them.
What do you mean, a bit of meat?
He's certainly very full of beans, I think, Ken, in this one. It's a very fun performance of Snide, but he's much more... Snide becomes more, in some episodes, he's an idiot. In others, he's quite a womaniser who's after the ladies, isn't he? But very ineptly. And just the way he sort of interacts with Tony is very funny. Like, particularly the morning cheeky. Want to come to the pictures with me?
Good morning, cheeky. Want to come to the pictures with me?
And then the bit at one point where Tony's like, oh, no, I can't. What's on? He just considers it for a moment.
You mentioned earlier, John, that this was... I think you said that Hancock was getting into his stride by now. This was the fourth series, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I think what was interesting about it is actually this programme is actually quite riotous, isn't it? From start to finish, it's fast-paced comedy and farce. Yeah. When you compare it to sort of like Sunday Afternoon at Home or The Elopement and that come later. And it seems when you look through the Hancocks, they definitely get better and better and better. And when you get to this series, and particularly the end of this series, so this is the end of series four. And if you go back to the 20th of January 57, you've got the old school reunion. The next week was The Wild Man of the Woods. Agricultural Hancock and Hancock in the Police. Now that's 4 weeks running, four absolutely high-powered comedy classics.
Crackers.
Absolute crackers. And I don't think, although there's obviously lots of great episodes early on, I don't think you get four of that quality on the run like that.
Do you think that was ever appreciated when they were all released, Tim?
I'm sure it wasn't.
Do you think it's with hindsight?
Yeah, and I think we spoke before about the TV Series 7, didn't we? You know, when you had the Bowmans 1 week, the Blood Donor the next week, the Radio Ham and the Lift all in... You know, I mean, that is just absolute comic gold. And it all came within a month in June 61, you know. And I'm sure that people at the time, I don't think you ever do appreciate things at the time. It's only later you go back and say, well, actually, that was pretty good.
I think what they would do this time, they would probably release two of the ones as actually corkers. And they'd say, well, we'll save that one for the second series.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And it'd probably be drip fed to the audience.
The series finished 2 weeks later with The Last of the McHancocks, which again was another absolutely brilliant episode. And funnily enough, was the last one, of course, that Snide appeared in.
Gets killed off at the end, doesn't he? Yeah.
Killed off at the end. This is almost the last episode with Snide in.
And he does celebrate, doesn't he, as well, when that happens.
Yeah, he said he does. You know,
at last, got him.
He's got it at last. Got him at last.
He had it coming.
And doesn't reappear apart from the Transcription Services remakes, where, of course, he's still in those. But it is, as you say, Tim, it's an absolutely fantastic, brilliant series.
Really is, isn't it?
And the series after takes a little time to get into its stride again, doesn't it? Because you start off with, these are good episodes, you know, the new radio series, the Scandal magazine was a good one, but then it goes to the male suffragettes, which we've referred to a couple of times as being a bit unfortunate, if you like.
A bit out of date, shall we say.
Yes. And then I'm not a huge fan of the insurance policy.
I think that's great.
Oh, that's a brilliant one. Yeah.
I really enjoy that one.
But later on, you get things like the unexploded bomb and the Americans hit town, which sort of bring it up to very high quality again.
Yeah, well, quite a lot of these ones from series 4 and 5, you know, it's got Hattie in it and she brings an awful lot. She's just, she's got a wonderful range. What a voice she's got. You know, she can go from imperious, bombastic sort of battle axe to flighty girl who's romantic and wants to press daisies and everything in between. And she just, even as she's playing one character, Griselda, she's got an awful lot to do and she's so good on radio.
She really made a difference, didn't she, when she came in? I mean, absolute masterstroke in casting. Mm. Absolutely superb.
Well, of course, they worked years before on both the 1956 TV series and even earlier in 1951 on Educating Archie when they were both in that. And, you know, Hattie had been around for years. She was in Itmar back in the 40s, you know, so...
Yeah, she was a big name.
Good name, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And as you say, when she came on, it really gave the series a lift. And and by this point, towards the end of that first series that she was in, as you say, she's really hit her stride. And I do think after the first few, when she was really quite, as you say, imperious, her character softened a little bit. And I think that was the best episodes once that had happened.
Because when you listen to her first appearance in the original version of The New Secretary, she comes across as very hard, doesn't she?
She does.
Yeah.
But then, as you say, she softens. And her role changes as well, because she's sort of employed as his secretary. Then all of a sudden she's cooking meals and doing all sorts of things.
Mm. She's very much matriarchal, isn't she, I think?
Yeah, and in this episode, you know, Hancock is a copper, and when they want someone to be a decoy, he says, well, why don't you have my secretary, Miss Pugh? I mean, as if a policeman would have a secretary, you know, but no one seems to argue with that. It's just accepted.
Well, yeah. And now imagine her character always having some great pot of something boiling away on the stove.
Yes.
Maybe that's inspired by Hattie, because her dinner parties were legendary.
Were they?
Early Crescent, well, she had two ovens and she was like to make sure no one left her house without a full belly.
Oh, brilliant. But yeah. I do like the way that she's asked, because Hancock says, why don't we use my secretary? Then you get a little bit of the incidental music and the next word is Hattie saying, no.
No, yeah, brilliant.
No.
But Miss Pugh, your country needs you.
Stop pointing your finger at me. You look like Lord Kitchener. Now go away. I've got to finish sewing See You Later Alligator on my sweater before the concert tonight. You'll just have to find someone else.
And then the way she delivers, stop pointing your finger at me like that. You look like Lord Kitchener. That's a wonderful, wonderful line as well. You know, because we can all imagine that. Even now, Lord Kitchener is just as well known for that poster as he was in the 50s. But Tony makes such an inept policeman, doesn't he? You know, his first week on duty, well, you know, the car crashes and all the sound effects they put together for that, which must have been great fun to put together.
It wasn't my fault! If a bee was buzzing around your head, you'd try and swat it too!
You'd swat a bee as well.
And don't forget the Belisha Beacon.
The Belisha Beacon, yeah.
See, I never understood that joke when I was small child, but I do know what a Belisha Beacon is now. And in fact, they used to be around more when I was a child than they are now, but that's a good one.
I thought that Belisha Beacons must have been quite new at the time, but they weren't, were they? They'd come in years before that. And the way it came in the script and the reaction from the audience, I thought it was a new thing that had just been. Mm. But it wasn't.
10 o'clock p.m. saw a tall, thin, sinister-looking man with a big head loitering on a street corner. Crept up behind him and bashed him over the head with me truncheon.
10:05 p.m. hid up dark alleyway while they fitted new Belisha beacon.
I didn't realise how the two jokes actually aligned, where he's, when he's sort of reciting his diary, he's a sore, tall, thin-looking man loitering on the street corner, and then the next bit is, you know, he's popped him on the head. And yes. It's actually yeah. It was a guy who was fitting the Belisha beacons. Yeah, connect with me.
Because he says, hit down dark alley whilst they fitted yeah. new Belisha beacon.
That's right.
Yes.
He also says that he hid down the dark alley 5 minutes later while they fixed it. So they got round there and fixed it pretty quickly, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't happen now.
Yeah, that wouldn't happen these days, would it?
No, no. The other great bit as well is after all his screwing up of his first week, it's like, and now, after this Hancock... You know, been sent round to make sure the pub's close on time and found 2 hours later on top of Uros singing bawdy songs. I love that line. It's a great one, isn't it? Because you can just see it in your mind's eye. It's the on top of Uros thing. It wouldn't be as funny without that little piece. It just shows the writing of Ray and Allen, doesn't it? Mm.
We can all make mistakes. Good grief.
Mistakes? 2 new Belisha beacons, £10,000 damages for smashed up cars, £15 fine for dangerous driving, and now this. Sent round to make sure the pub's closed on time and found 2 hours later on top of Eros singing bawdy songs.
I love how he just comes across so corruptible throughout it, you know, when Sid offers him a brandy. Was it brandy?
Yeah.
Whiskey.
Yeah,
so. Oh, no, I can't. I was like, oh, come on, fill the truncheon up.
Yeah, and he mentions he got that from Moulin Rouge or something, doesn't he? Yeah, which I've not seen Moulin Rouge, that one. I did watch Rafifi, but I didn't watch Moulin Rouge.
Then Sid comes on the scene, doesn't he? And he meets him in the street. But Sid actually appears 15 minutes into the episode. That's quite late on, really, isn't it?
It is a late appearance from Sid.
Yeah, that is late on.
It is late.
Who are you? Copper.
Oh, good evening, Sid. Sid?
Oh, bloody Hancock. You frightened the life out of me in a fancy dress. What's the big idea?
There's another episode, and I can't for the life of me remember which one it is, when Sid comes in late, and the line is, I didn't think you were going to be in this week. And I can't remember which episode that is, but he is quite late in several.
No, I can't think of it either. But I know in one of the TV episodes, because Sid was in every radio episode, but there was 2 TV episodes he wasn't in because he was doing something else, one of which is the Alpine holiday that exists. And there was another one as well. But then the following episode, in the opening of the title sequence, you've got Hancock's half hour, Tony on screen, and then Sid goes, hello, Tony. And Tony's reaction is, oh, cool, in that opening title sequence for Hancock's half hour. So when he's not in it or appears back in it, it's and it's commented on, it's quite fun.
Oh, right, I can't, isn't
it? Yeah, it's, I think it's the opening episode of, episode 3 of series 2 of the TV series, so it'll be in the script there somewhere, but worth looking up.
Yeah.
Do any
of
you know if point duty is actually a thing?
Well, do you know, when I was listening to this the other day, I thought of that, and I mean, I think they used to have point duty really in the days before traffic lights, but traffic lights were obviously invented quite a lot before 1957 or whatever. But I guess when I think of point duty, I think of films like the Lavender Hill Mob, that sort of era, you know, in the early 50s with policemen standing on corners and directing the traffic and stuff like that. But it certainly went down well with the audience, I notice. And, you know, references to, I think he says something like...
What is the object of point duty?
That is to see how long a queue of cars you can collect at a given point. When you think you have sufficient vehicles held up, you signal your colleague... He goes down the tail end and nicks him for parking an Hornblower.
That sort of line goes down very well with the audience. I think it was quite the thing at the time.
Because he actually flies through the training, doesn't he? Mm.
Yes, it's a very quick 8 weeks. I don't know. My stepsister's just joined the Met. So I'll have to ask her how long the training course is, but I imagine it's longer than in this episode.
Yeah.
The third step of a boot.
Yeah, exactly. I'm hoping she's learning how to... talk to the owner of that parked car.
Hello, hello, hello. Are you the owner of this car?
Yes, officer.
I've been standing here for 4 days watching this car. Yes, 4 old days I've been standing here watching this car, and I must ask you to move it.
Why?
It is parked upon my foot.
What a lovely rejoinder from Ken. That's just the right touch of sarcasm.
Yes.
It does feel like they've got quite a low regard for the police in how they portray them.
Times haven't changed, have they? Yeah.
But you know, I was thinking that. It's funny. One of the things I like about Hancock is the sort of social history bit and listening to how times were. But actually, you know, things like that, they do come through. And there's other references to other parts of cultural life at the time that come through, you know, and how different people were viewed. It's like the vicar's thing, isn't it? You know, the respect that a vicar had in those days. And not only does the vicar come around to tea in a couple of episodes, but there's a couple of times when Hancock is up against authority and he says, I'm going to complain to the vicar, you know, because the vicar in those days would have had some influence. It's quite incredible.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? But then, I don't know, one of my grandfathers, not the one that's still with us, he was a police officer in the 1950s, and I very much got the impression from my father that, yeah, the little bunts, the little extras in the marketplace, you know, was not uncommon. So,
well, you know who we can ask about this, don't you? Because our society's treasurer is an ex-copper.
Mm.
He's retired from the force, so we can ask him about the bunts he used to get. But I remember I was brought up in the 60s and 70s. I certainly remember stories of the police pulling over motorists and the idea of putting a 10-bob note inside the driving licence or a pound note when you handed it over to the policeman was fairly well known, and everyone sort of did that.
Mm.
And I know a friend of mine in the 70s had a job working for a certain organisation. I won't go further than that, but basically they used to give commission to the police when the police used to call them out for different things, you know, and it was accepted practice.
For a period of time, I lived in the south of Spain, and it's actually very common practice over there to... But you've got to make sure you bribe the right ones. There's two. You got the Guardia, and there's the local police. You can bribe, but you can't. The Guardia de Seville, which is where we were, you couldn't bribe those. But they pull you over regularly. I got pulled over several times for no apparent reason.
Mm.
Lots of pointing at my wallet and nodding my head to get away.
Mm.
And that was about 15, 16, well, about longer than that now, 16, 17 years ago.
I think you have to be careful here. Edit this, John, or else we'll all end up in Chokey.
Might take that bit out, yeah, yeah.
Well, we're not in the EU anymore, so they can't...
I can't come after you now.
Statute of limitations.
One of the interesting things I spotted was when Hancock is on the beach with Bill, he does one side of Bond Street and Bill does the other side of Bond Street. But did you know there is no such place as Bond Street?
Is there not?
I didn't know.
No, I didn't.
Stunned silence. Well, as any Londoner will know...
It must be real. It's on Monopoly, isn't it?
There is a tube station called Bond Street, but the street is Old Bond Street one side and New Bond Street the other. Bond Street on its own as a street does not exist. And I remember being outside Bond Street's tube station once and some tourists coming up, foreign tourists, whatever, saying we want to go to Bond Street. And I said, well, actually, there isn't one. And they look at you as if you're mad. But, yeah.
Is that not colloquially known as Bond Street, though? Is that not a little pedantic? I don't know.
It's one of those things I understand where we name things because that's what the railways did. And, I mean, I live in a town in Essex where the town is not on the map, but it's only on the railway station. And similarly, Bond Street, for whatever reason, London Transport decided to call it Bond Street. It might be known as that colloquially, but it's certainly, there's no street sign in London saying Bond Street.
That's an interesting one.
Someone's going to say I'm wrong now. Yeah, yeah. People are looking up there. People are Googling their A to Z at the moment to try and prove me wrong. But
if you wish to complain, it's East Cheam Lad on Twitter.
You might get a call after this podcast, John, saying, John, quick, edit that out. I was wrong.
You might do. But as well, Sid, and we haven't really touched on Sid. As you say, he comes in a bit later. Tony is the most inept police officer, giving away all the secrets of how to get into the shops to his dodgy mate without realising. And he's like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, she's looking for some jewellery. It's my mother's birthday next week.
Yes.
There you are. Look at that display, eh? £20,000 of the stuff in there at least.
£26,565. I suppose there's a burglar alarm somewhere.
Oh, yes, naturally. It's just above the door, you see it?
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, the lines with Ken. Okay, well, this is no good, Hancock. Well, he said he was a lawyer. He even had his wig on. I didn't know. Well, yes, I helped him up the stairs with a pneumatic drill.
Wrapped in a blanket.
That's the funniest line in the whole programme, that.
Yeah, with it all wrapped in a blanket, isn't it? Wrapped in a blanket. Yeah.
Wrapped in a blanket in the drill. That is just so good.
Well, how was I to know it wasn't the lawyer going into his office with a pneumatic drill? Yes, sir, I admit I opened the door for him. A mistake anybody could make. He said he was a lawyer. He even had his wig on.
Again, that goes back to Rafifi, because they break in from the floor above, but not with a pneumatic drill, much more quietly than that.
Do they? Right.
Have you seen Rafifi?
I have seen Rafifi.
Ten times. You missed it.
It must have been quite a... Because it was Rafifi actually means fisticuffs, translated into English. And it was known at the time, it got very good reviews, but it was known as quite a brutal film. You know, there's wife beating with a belt, there's out of shot, of course. Basically, every character in it is dead by the end of the film. Spoiler alert, a bit late. But it is quite it's quite a stark, grim...
It's an enjoyable watch then, John.
It's a great movie, beautifully shot, great cast in it.
But, beautifully shot, and so were the cast.
Exactly, yeah.
John, just so you know, it's best to say spoiler alert before you say what's happened, not after.
Not after.
They've had 65 years since it came out, so I think it'll be all right. I think it's fine.
We'll be all right.
Yeah, I think we'll be all right.
That's my movie night ruined tomorrow.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one. Going back to Kenneth and his wonderful turn as Snide in this, and he's on fire in this one, isn't he? When he's arrested, he's like, you're wanted for, you know, all of this string of robberies.
You're wanted on a charge of robbing 49 shops, 3 factories, a warehouse and a bank. What do you got to say?
What are the girls like in prison?
You know, he's amorous little character.
I think my favourite Kenneth Williams character in this episode is probably the recruitment officer, because he's just so sarcastic.
Yeah.
All right, Romulus, where are we born?
Father?
No.
Mother?
No.
All right, Romulus, where were you born?
I don't know. Rumour has it I was raised by a herd of rogue kangaroos.
What sort of sports car? Like two...
Nice two-seater drophead?
What sort of patrol car would you prefer? Nice royal blue drophead or two-seater sports car, possibly?
Yes, with the white wall towers and a nice...
Yes, with the white wall towers.
What uniform? Midnight blue?
I like it when he does the news. And, you know, when we have the thing where Hancock says, oh, you wouldn't...
We'd spot them immediately. As long as they didn't do it between 3:33 and 3:37 in the morning.
3:37. Why, what happens then?
Well, the road bends a bit there, and just for those 4 minutes, me and Bill are out of sight. You can't hear a thing that goes on down here. Not a dicky bird, but then...
And you just know what's going to happen, and then Kenneth comes on and says, here is the news, and you just know what he's going to say, and the audience react to it in that way. So.
But the news is great, because he says... This jeweller's was robbed between 3:33 and 3:37.
Yeah,
I mean, it's so precise.
It is, absolutely.
Thieves broke into a Bond Street jeweller's shop this morning between 3:33 and 3:37 while the patrolling constable was out of earshot.
And then you got Sid. Like your new sports car, Sid. Rolls-Royce.
New Rolls-Royce.
Which one?
The white one. Yeah, no, it's not bad.
I like your new Rolls-Royce, Sid.
Which one? Oh, the white one. Yeah, not bad.
Well, I suppose I better get back on duty.
That line foxed me when I was younger, but of course it occurs to me that he's got so many Rolls Royces he can't remember which one he's brought out with him. Mm. It harks back to that second series radio episode, though, where Sid is trying to steal the crown jewels by much more direct methods. And so the two have got similar plot elements there, haven't they? Which unfortunately is a lost episode, but the Missing Hancock's version with the wonderful Andy Secombe is very much worth a listen. Takes you right back to 1955.
I'm sorry, Mr. James, I didn't recognise you in the beef-eater's uniform and the black mask.
Say, how long have you been a beef-eater, Sid?
I joined this morning. If all goes well, I'll resign tonight.
We were just
saying how much the crown jewels would be worth to someone who stole them.
Oh, come on now. Who could possibly steal the crown jewels that would take a master criminal?
Of course. Why, he'd have to disguise himself as a beef eater or something.
Hold this sack for me.
Certainly.
How long have the jewels been kept here, Mr. James?
Oh, hundreds of years. I hear they're being transferred soon.
When?
Hold that sack open.
Sure. As I was saying, the crook hasn't been born who could get this lot.
Yeah, definitely worth a listen. I love the fact that Hancock says, well, you won't get in unless you've got this key.
You can only open it if you've got this key or a duplicate.
That key?
That's it. What are you pressing it in the soap for?
Well, a souvenir, you know.
Souvenir?
Yeah.
How patriotic. I do admire that.
And then he presses it in a bar of soap.
Yes.
Why are you putting it in the soap? Why not just a memento?
Souvenir.
How very patriotic of you, yeah.
I love the other one that comes up quite a lot in Hancock's Half Hour is referring to someone as a Charlie, isn't it? And in this one, he says, oh,
I see you as a Laura.
Do you? Well, I see you as a Charlie.
Which gets a huge laugh from the audience. And I'm not sure when that went out of fashion, but I think it must have been one of those things in the 50s that if someone was a bit silly or whatever, you used to call them a Charlie. I know that...
You used to call them a right Charlie.
Yeah, in the 80s and 90s, we used to call them a Wally, didn't we? I don't know what people call them now, but...
We still do that in the West Country, Tim.
What, Wally or Charlie?
Yeah, Charlie, Wally.
Do you still call him a Charlie?
I do at work because he's the only one you can get away with now, isn't it?
Apparently it's military slang.
I haven't heard anyone say that for years.
No.
It's what slang?
According to the internet, I'm just having a quick Google, it's some kind of military slang, presumably. But obviously, you know, there's a lot of ex-servicemen.
Well, these guys are
ex-servicemen, yeah. The lot, pretty much. Informal, a fool. Idiot, halfwit, nincompoop, blockhead, buffoon, dunce, dolt, ignoramus, cretin, imbecile, dullard, moron, simpleton, old clod.
Or Bill Kerr.
So, yeah.
And copies of this full Theosaurus are available on request.
Exactly. It's a good one. I think it should come back, that one. It should definitely come back into common parlance.
Bring back Charlie.
Yeah, thank you, Charlie. We'll do that.
Wonderful sort of show with some great lines, some real high comedy and silliness from all the cast, and Kenneth on fine form. And it's just a wonderful farce, as Tim was saying, isn't it, really?
Mm. And unlike the classic, you know, the blood donor, the lift and et cetera, where I've talked about circular stories, doesn't really have that circular, but it is very continuous.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It doesn't really come around to start again. Necessarily.
No, it doesn't. Although, of course, you have got the fact that he's now on the Crown Jewels and he's going to repeat the same thing he did in New Bond Street or Old Bond Street and give away the secret so that Sid can nick the Crown Jewels. But so you are right. It's not quite the same circular sort of story you often get with the Gordon Simpson script.
It's a little bit ill. There you are. For the first time, we can say it's not entirely circular, this one. It's all about... I just love comedy and crime. They just work so wonderfully together. Some of my favourite comedies are the sort of 50s ones with people like Leslie Phillips and Wilfred Hyde White and Peter Sellers, those sort of crime capers. Gordon Simpson did a couple, didn't they, in the form of that... what's that one set in the prison with Peter Sellers and Bernard Cribbins now?
Is it Wrong Arm of the Law?
Wrong Arm of the Law, that's it.
All right, stay where you are.
Well... Now, what have we got here?
I wish you every happiness and my felicitations to the group.
You know what you're falling for, don't you? The oldest bleeding game in the business, that's all, the IPO caper.
IPO?
My last six jobs have been hijacked by some new mob that's moved in.
Why, darling, who'd do a thing like that to you?
My staff are not hooligans, and furthermore, they do not dress up as coppers.
Oh, give me that. Look, I never had any trouble before. I form a syndicate with you, and the very first job goes for a burden. Well, what am I supposed to think?
A quiet bit of breaking and entering is one thing, but sloshing a bogey in the execution of his duty.
Great movie, that one. And there's another one of a similar, which I think is a two-way stretch, which with the two, I think, are very similar, share a lot of the same cast. Both wonderful movies, aren't they?
Oh, brilliant film.
And this one is a bit like, as James was saying, a bit like a mini movie. The other wonderful bit in it is where he's right near the beginning, he's going houses or renting loo. And then the audience laughs and says, I'll do that in French, rent in lieu.
It says plus house or rent in lieu. Houses.
Never thought. I'll do that in French. Do we start again? It says plus house or rent in lieu.
Which is a nice little ad lib that you get included.
He actually says, didn't even think. I'll do it in French. So it's a real nice, as you say, you don't get many ad libs from Hancock, but this was a great one.
Often quiet for the actors occasionally and things like that, yeah.
Or don't overdo it, we've got 25 minutes to go.
Yes, that's a nice one.
And one thing we haven't mentioned is the plate layer on the Gold Coast Railway, of course.
Oh, he doesn't know anything about railways.
He doesn't have to. Plate layer, plate layer. It's set in the tables in the restaurant car.
Set in the tables in the restaurant car.
Surely it must be. Plate layer.
Yeah, I've forgotten that one. That's a brilliant line, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Shows his stupidity, which is shown up quite a lot in this particular episode, isn't it?
And he's more gullible in this as well, isn't he? It's the gullibility comes through all the way through. The fact that he's feeding all this information to Sid and doesn't cotton on is just it's this typical gullible Hancock, isn't it?
It certainly is. It certainly is. So I suppose it's time for the scores. So what do you reckon you're going to give that one, James?
It's a very, very easy, straightforward 10 for me. I just think it's absolutely laugh a minute. So many great performances. Even Hattie Jakes with her, you know, a couple of cameos in it, really, but she just performed so, so well. Ever so talented, Kenneth Williams absolutely knocks out of the park with sort of five different characters. The concentration levels and the amount of sort of rehearsal that he must have had to do in such a short turnaround of time to deliver those lines word perfectly and expertly. It's just absolutely phenomenal from start to finish. And I love it. Absolutely love it.
Certainly is. Well, I must concur. I definitely have to give it a 10 out of 10 as well. I've always loved this radio episode. It's the one I always quote as my favourite of the radio shows. There are several others that are just as good, but this one just particularly tickles me every time. So great show. Some lovely comedy. Drag on the radio, which you don't need as much makeup for, and wonderful performances from everyone involved. You know, they've all got a little moment to shine. It's so frenetic, they fit an awful lot into that 30 minutes. That could be the plot of a, you know, an hour and a quarter movie or something like that. So yeah, 10 out of 10. Doesn't get much better than this.
I think I would concur with that, and I think I will give it 10 too. I think it's an absolute classic episode. As you say, it's quite frenetic, and in this series I think the episodes built up as it went along to this fantastic crescendo with these episodes at the end of that series. Kenneth Williams is just on fire, there's no doubt about it. Five characters and distinct voice for each of them, fantastic delivery, and all the cast, in fact, and it's just a riot from start to finish. It's one of those scripts that was really made for radio. You simply couldn't do it on TV, anything like that. You can just sit down, close your eyes and listen to this and don't stop laughing for half an hour. If only they made comedies like that today. It really is superb stuff. And yeah, I'll go with the 10 for that.
Well, I'm not going to change that score at all. I'm going to also go for a 10. It's one of my favourite radio episodes. And as you say, it's fast-paced, it's frenetic. It's a farce which you don't get that often in Hancock's Half Hour. And that, I think, all adds to it. The brilliant Kenneth Williams. And my favourite line from Kenneth is one of the new ones, or the one of the big ones in the extended edition. You're a short man for 6'2", aren't you? I just think that's absolutely brilliant. But the Kenneth Williams, as you say, he's on fire, and all those different voices, and being able to just move from one character to the next, even with just a few seconds between them, it's an absolutely fantastic performance from him, and as with all the rest of the cast. So 10 out of 10 from me, a brilliant one.
Can I just bring something up that I should have brought up earlier?
Of course you can.
So when he's at the recruitment offices and Kenneth says, what name? He says, Anthony Aloysius St. John Hancock. Isn't that where that very famous interview with Hancock comes later, when they introduce him as Aunt Aloysius St. John Hancock? He says, no, actually, that's not my name. Is this the only sort of time he brings it up in the radio show, that was his name?
No, I think it started earlier than that.
Cut that out then, John.
Well, in fact, the Anthony Aloysius St. John Hancock name was given to him by Gorton Simpson before Hancock's Half Hour started. It was either in Star Bill or Forces All Star, one of these early 50s radio show. It didn't stick at that time, but they came back to it in Hancock's Half Hour. And I'm pretty sure there are earlier episodes in Hancock's Half Hour where that name is given. I can't I'd have to check where the first one was, but I'm pretty sure this was not the first time it was used in HHH.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I think so. And that interview I think you're referring to, James, is the face-to-face one where John Freeman says, you know, how did you get your name, Anthony Allen, which is St. John Hancock? And he said, oh, it's not my real name. It's Anthony John Hancock.
Yeah.
From when was that, 61?
That was 61, yeah.
I'm assuming his dad wasn't called Alphonse Gallifrey either then. That's what you're telling next, isn't it?
Nor did he have an auntie called Hilda Jellicoe.
Yes. No, Hilda Lloyd George.
Hilda Lloyd George,
yeah. That was it. Frieda Jericho was the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, there's a wonderful mix of weird, wonderful names. So, definitely, well, more than average, we know 10 pints, that is certainly more than a body's full, definitely more than an arm's full. So, I think that's about it for this week. So, if you want to take it away, Tim.
Come and join us at the Tony Hancock Appreciation Society today. You can find us at tonyhancock.org.uk for all you need to know on how to join.
For just £13 a year, you'll have access to the members area of our website and receive 4 magazines a year by email, packed with information on Tony, his shows and archive material.
Members also get a digital-only bonus page supplement every quarter, plus an occasional special edition focused on a single theme.
Or you can have printed copies posted to your door for £16 in the UK or £26 worldwide.
We are a friendly and welcoming bunch, so please do join. We have reunion dinners with archive displays and the occasional Zoom quiz night.
Get in touch. We do love questions and conundrums, compliments and feedback. To do so, it's very easy. Send your emails to podcast@tonyhancock.org.uk.
Keep an eye on our Twitter accounts for the latest news on the podcast and all things Tony Hancock. We have 3 accounts, East Team Lad, Tony Hancock Appreciation Society, and Very Nearly an Armful.
In the next episode, we'll be reviewing one of the most popular radio episodes, The Poetry Society. Much like the film The Rebel, is a bit of a satire on attitudes to art and culture.
Well, that's Very Nearly an Armful, so I'll say ta-ta.
It's sayonara from me.
Tickety snitch.
And this is GLK London signing off for a quick cough and a drag.
Evening, Cheeky. Want to come to the pictures with me?
I was waiting to see what you would do, John.
This has been an official podcast of the Tony Hancock Appreciation Society. Unfortunately, it was not written by Alan Simpson and Ray Gorton, whoever they are. The announcer is me, Robin Sebastian, currently appearing in the saloon bar of the Hendon Racket.
Oh, I think that was another good one, wasn't it? So I really enjoyed that. I'm going to look forward to editing that one.
Another good one, Ronnie.
Another good one, Ronnie. Hey! Watch out, the producer's coming.